This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Armchair.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us again on the R-Cast. My name is Buddha.
My name is Martin.
And we are here today with the good one, man. The people that we got here in the studio with us, they're touching all kinds of different bases. They are both recovery specialists from Graham County. They represent the House of Hope, Recovery Angels. They're doing amazing things throughout the community. Ladies and gentlemen, give a huge round of applause to our friends, Jason and Kristen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is it going, guys?
It's good. How are you doing?
All right. I love that. I saw Jason got a big old smile on his face when he heard that applause, bro.
I was worried that he wasn't going to smile off, man.
How is it going, man?
It's going good.
You guys doing all right?
Yeah, we're doing good.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You guys came from Graham County?
Yes.
Drove down here today?
Mm-hmm. Out of Safford, Arizona.
A couple hours.
How was that drive?
Good.
We do it quite a bit, so
it's... Yes, yeah, it's no problem.
Nope.
That's cool, man. Well, you know, it's a blessing to have you guys in here.
Thank you.
Martin, bro, you got to let us know how we got connected here,
We got connected. I think it was last week, man. We were invited over there in Safford, Arizona, Graham County. There was going to be the sheriff talking about substance abuse in the border and all that. So we went, Ark set up a table and all that. It was an amazing event. I already knew Jason. I had heard of him and his work, his amazing work he's doing over there. And that's where I met Kristen. So we were just chopping it up, talking while we're setting up tables. Amazing people, easy to talk to in recovery as well, too. So it made it a little bit easier. And Kristen kind of shared about a newsletter that she's doing. And then after kind of hearing Jason, what he's doing, I was like, it's amazing to have him on the podcast,
yep.
You know, kind of share what they're doing in the community. And I see they're passionate about it. And I think it's just a great opportunity to invite them and get the people to listen about the amazing work they're doing.
Yes.
So I don't know if Kristen wants to tell us a little bit about that newsletter that's kind of going on, how it started and everything.
So my newsletter started, I was recently released from the Arizona Department of Corrections 4 months ago.
Wow.
And before I went to prison, I had to check myself into rehab for 90 days so I could make it to prison because I was just running around. I was afraid I was going to skip out on some bonds. I was afraid I was going to drink myself to death or before I got there. So I checked myself into rehab, and that's the first time I got a little bit of the recovery bug. And when I got to prison, I ended up getting taken back to county jail, picked up some more charges, but I just was trying to be really positive, had a lot of family support. So I got really active in recovery. And I took a class called The Way Out that walks you through your steps. And I ended up teaching that class and then starting some of my own curriculum. And I got just really close with some of the girls. And at the end of my 5-year sentence, when I was ready to leave, all of us were really upset because you make these really, they become your family there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the girls, I'm on a minimum yard. So we're all doing 5 years or less. Mm-hmm. So some of the girls I started with, we were leaving with. Some of the girls I had met were still staying there. And I told them, don't worry, I'm going to keep in contact with you. And they're all like, okay, yeah, you won't, right. You know, because that's not really a thing. So I had 2 short-term goals when I got out of prison. And one was to get my recovery support specialist and one was to do this newsletter. And 2 months before I got out, I finally had access to a computer and I emailed the director of the Graham County Substance Abuse Coalition, which is Kathy Grimes, because I knew her. And I said, hey, I'm really interested in being of service in the community. I've had some people pour into me that I want to pour back into the community. This is where I'm from. I told the judge when I got taken back from my page 2, I was looking at 7 more years, and the prosecutor and the pretrial guy wanted to give me 7 more years. So that was 12 years in prison. So my brother got up and spoke. I wrote a really good letter about how I got active in recovery and that when I got out, I wanted to help people. I wanted to go back into jails and institutions. And I've literally only been in prison for 2 months at this point. And Judge Peterson took a break. And when he came back and he said, I feel like I am going to grant you a level of mercy today. And he said, I'm not going to be very popular today, but I'm going to offer you probation. But when you get out, if you don't do what you're supposed to, you're going to get 13 years. And
wow.
Yeah. He said, but I expect you to do this. So I go back to prison and I'm like, I'm blessed. I'm so blessed, because that never happens when a prosecutor is like, and the evidence was there where I should have been convicted. I could have been convicted because I picked up a DUI when I was out on felony release. So it was a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
It was a miracle. And so I stayed really active in recovery. I was locked down the whole time in COVID. But anyways, I told the girls I would start this newsletter. When I got out, within 2 weeks, Kathy came to my house, Graham County Substance Abuse Coalition. And, you know, she just breathed some possibility into me, because, like, we want you to work with us. We want, you know, we're here to do whatever you want. And I told her about the newsletter. When I got it together, I sent it to her. And she's like, you know what? We could really work with this. So she helped me with printing it. The Substance Abuse Coalition did. And I sent out about 40 the first month. And we have a lady that would go in and do AA. And she called me and she's like, the girls love it. Well, I had some guys that mentored me in the Second Chance program from Phoenix West. They run the Second Chance program. They're all recovery support specialists. Mm-hmm. They're all like really like into recovery. And they're just going to be really successful when they get out. One of them's done like, he's doing a life sentence, but he's about to get out. They've all been incarcerated off and on, but I sent it into them and immediately I got letters in the mail. They had no idea who I was. They knew who I was in prison because they had seen me virtually, but they were like the light. They were like, this is awesome. Like, can you write us back? And we used to make this joke that I was this white girl rapper, because I would always rap in prison. And so I said, I wrote them back and I said, it's the white girl rapper. And they were like, we thought it was
cool.
You.
Yeah. That's
like,
cool.
We thought it was you. And so it just kind of took off from there, because a lot of people just don't have somebody in prison. And I really wanted to do what I told the judge I was going to do. So 2 weeks after I get out, I go to a Substance Abuse Coalition and I have this newsletter where I tell the story of the judge and he's sitting like right by me. And I was like, this is crazy. So I walk over to him and I'm like, wow. Here's what I'm working on. I said, I know you don't recognize me out of stripes. And he's like, you look so much better. And so from there, it's just taken on a life of itself. Like, I have the opportunity to put it out on the Securus tablets pretty soon, live. And that will go to prisons over the whole country.
That's so awesome.
Let me just tell you where the name of the light came from, though. At my sentencing, my brother got up and said a quote by Viktor Frankl that said, what is to give light must endure burning. And my sister's done some burning, but I feel like she has a light to give other people. And that just stuck with me. And that's where the light came from.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool.
That's deep. Yeah.
And you said that, you know, that was the time when you kind of got that recovery bug. What was the situation? Do you remember where you were when you finally started taking it seriously? Like, there was a change in you?
When I first got to rehab, I went to Crossroads in Phoenix and my dad had to take me down to the place to check me in. And I was like, Dad, can you give me money for the vending machines? And he was like, no. And I was like, why? And he said, have you met yourself? Like, oh, okay, I'll give you $20. And then I got to rehab. And for the first few days, I had that $20 in my purse. And all I could think about was going over the fence and going to Circle K and getting some vodka. And all I could think is like, I have a secret cell phone. I will call somebody. Somebody will come all these miles to get me. But I waited till I felt better. And I started kind of trying to take it seriously. And I didn't really... I was raised in church and I believe in God and all that. But at that point, I didn't really know or have a relationship with my higher power. So I was like praying to nobody. And for some reason, I didn't get this boom spiritual awakening. It kind of just happened gradually. And I just got really, really into it. And it's really what helped me be successful in prison was going in there sober. I got out for a few weeks before I went and I was going to meetings and I just was on this, you know, they call it a pink cloud of being in recovery. And then I get to prison. I got diagnosed with cancer on the same day they told me they're going to give me 7 years.
Oh my.
So I was like, okay, I'm not going to take my will back. I work my steps. Like, I'm going to keep turning my will over to God. Then I just had to sit there a while till they took me back to court. Mm-hmm. And then this miracle happens. And so I just really stayed with it and really stayed passionate about it. I do have a good support system. Part of the reason I wanted to start the light is because so many people in prison don't. You know, and I wanted to pour back into some people, like some of the girls in recovery with me, the guys in the Second Chance program. I just feel like if they have a little bit of support, not everybody's going to take that support or not everybody's going to take to that. I'm sure some people get my newsletter and throw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. But I've had a lot of people reach out that were like,
man,
you know.
You know, it's incredible to me how, you know, I think a lot of the things that we all struggle with, right, is like we want things to happen on our time, not God's time. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like he prepared you for that moment. you know, because it wasn't up until that moment when you finally got that change. And now he's using you to reach like that. You know what I mean? Like with the newsletter, hearing about how the light was started and how you're getting close to having it in all these prisons and people are going to be able to read it. Doesn't even matter those ones that throw it in the trash.
Right. Yeah.
Because the ones that are reading it are getting something from it. Like he's using you now. You know, I mean, I think that's an incredible part of that.
And so, I think the main thing also, it gives us purpose, right? So I know exactly what you mean. And that's what drives us to stay sober.
Yep.
Yeah.
Drives us to live another day. Gives us that light, how are you saying, inside mm-hmm. of us, right? I have a purpose in life. Like, I depend something. It's just a motivation is higher than going and get drunk or going to get high, right?
Because
we have a purpose every day. We're giving back to someone else. And I know exactly how that feeling mm-hmm. is. And so yeah, I give you props for everything that you're doing, for sharing that. And
you know, something you said about he's using me as he speaks through me kind of, what, I don't know exactly what you said, but I made this little speech to give. We all had an opportunity to get up and speak at our Second Chance graduation. It's a program that prepares you for release, all that stuff. And when I got out there, I had this little speech prepared and all of a sudden I stopped and I said, hold on. This is for the girls. Like, I don't want to talk to all you other people. I mean, thank you for having the program for me, but this is for my girls, you know?
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, I think God keeps some of his greatest treasures, like some of his most prized possessions. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't want to cry. Locked up in prisons and jails and rehabs. And
we got that right there if we need it. Okay.
and I said, you know, and he kept us locked up in here so we could get sober, and that now he's going to release us from behind these walls, and we're going to, and you know, within a couple of weeks we got out and we're all bawling, and you know, somebody taped it for me and it was crazy. I don't know where all those words came from, but through my recovery.
Yeah.
And the girls that took that class with me and put in the work to get their education, we're all being really successful because of recovery. A lot of us work at CBI. Some people work with the homeless. You know what I mean? We've been through recovery. I know people are a lot more likely to succeed that are in recovery.
Yeah.
In my experience. I don't know the statistics on it, but.
Man. That's incredible.
And what I was listening to as well, how God used these people, right? You said about the prosecutor. You talked about the judge, your brother mm-hmm. sharing that. And then the girls in the jail. Then after you got released, what's her name from the coalition?
Kathy,
right? She supported you through all that. So God always puts us people like in our path, right?
Yep.
To kind of get where we're going. It's amazing. Hearing that.
Especially when she said the judge was like, yo, I'm not going to be popular. Like, this is something that he felt, right? Like, this is something.
He felt it, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and one other thing that happened to me is, as I was in rehab, when I first got there, this is horrible, but I'm drunk, half drunk. And when I get there, I don't know how much of this you want me to say, but it's fine. This is real. Like,
you say whatever you want.
Yeah. I get there and he's like, ma'am. And my dad's waiting in the lobby and they're like, sir, you can leave. And he's like, I am not leaving till they put her in the car, you know? And because I come from a really good family, and I get there and he's like, ma'am, what's your drug of choice, or what's your DOC? And I said, I haven't even been to prison yet. Like, I'm going, but I haven't been there. And he said, no, your drug of choice. And I said, well, alcohol. So he goes and takes my urine sample and he comes back and he goes, this is not funny. Ma'am, did you do some cocaine this weekend? And I go, did I? Like, I was that messed up. Like, I didn't remember. So I get to rehab and just every nerve ending, my body is on fire. I didn't have any place to go. My family was sick of me. My husband was sick of me. I'd put them all through a lot. And there's this girl I met there and she's just really cool. And she's just talking to me. And every night I'm like crying to her. I'm not going to make it to prison. I'm going to die. I'm going to leave here. I can't do this. I can't go. And she was always really positive with me. Yes, you can. You're going to do it. There's a girl in there waiting for you. And I'm like, stop, you know? Yeah. So anyways, I get to prison. And after a few months, this little girl gets moved in next to me and she's just super irritating. She needs all this help. And I'm like, no, I'm going to help her. She doesn't have any money yet. I'm going to give her coffee. She's like asking me to do things with her. She's really upset. She has to leave her newborn baby. And I'm just trying to talk to her. She has 9 months. I'm still looking at 5 more years, you know, and I've been in county jail for 18 months and rehab. And so I'm just trying to be nice to her.
Yeah.
So she begs me to go to dinner with her one night. And she's just sitting there and she's just crying. She's kind of telling me the story, how her family, she has 5 sisters and they're all struggling. And I go, you know, I was in rehab with this girl. Same thing, like 5 sisters, they all have trouble. And I start telling her the story and she said, what was her name? And I said, her name's Haseeba. And she starts bawling. She says, that's my sister.
Wow.
So right then too, I was like, God shot. Like,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly.
He was ready.
He was ready.
It was crazy because I'm not even from Phoenix. And this girl's telling me there's going to be a girl. Uh-huh. It was crazy. Then I got to talk to Siba on the phone and it was just kind of crazy. When that happened, I was like, you better do what you said you're going to do.
Yeah.
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 Man, that's incredible.
That's incredible.
So, and then I know, Jason, we haven't even talked about your story yet, brother. Can you fill us in a little bit about, you know, how all of this started for you?
Yeah, I started using basic, you know, weed, alcohol, then it went to coke, then it went to meth, and
basic, huh?
Then I, well, basic for me, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then once I found meth, I landed, you know what I mean?
Wow.
By the time I was in high school, I was pretty much a meth and addict and alcoholic to where I used and drank on a daily basis. And I hid it from my family a long time, you know what I mean? But I wasn't that kid that finished high school or, you know, brother went to the military, I went to jail.
Yeah.
kind of tight deal, you know what I mean? And then I just kept using all through my adult life. And I'm going to keep it kind of short and sweet, but I mean, because we all know the war stories, right?
Like,
yeah.
Behind the using and jails and loss of family members and mom, dad getting sick of you. And, you know, at one point I called my mom and I was in jail. And that was the first kind of, and it didn't make me stop, but it was the kind of first realization that I knew my parents were kind of, well, they're sick of my shit. You know what I mean? Because I called my mom and she goes, all right, now I can sleep tonight. I know where you are.
That's right.
I'm like, well, love you too, mom.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, that was the one and only time my dad ever, and he told me this is the one and only time I'm going to bail you out. So, and he made sure I went to court. Like, he made sure I went and stood with him and went to court and got my probation and everything done. And you know, none of that stopped me. You know, I couldn't get sober for parents. And, you know, fast forward a little bit, I had a daughter. And I stood sober a little bit, I guess you could say. I still drank and well, whatever. But,
Cali sober, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing about me, I always went to work because I had a kid to feed or, like, I had to feed my addiction. And sometimes it wasn't always honest money the way I worked, but I worked.
Yeah.
You know, and then I got married. Well, my first baby mama, she went back. You know, she took my daughter from me, and they moved to Mexico, and that went all bad. And after that, I just...
Sure, that added to the stress, huh?
Yeah. Mm. You know, and then she kept calling the baby sick. I mean, you know, my selfish, egotistical pride, like, you know, you're the one that left. You had it all here. And anyways, again, fast forward. And I married again and got another daughter. I have two daughters, two amazing daughters. Thank God they, you know, they're in college and
good,
doing their thing. You know, one's just got proposed to. And
congratulations.
I don't know how I like that yet, but.
Right. Yeah.
I just told you got to remember your dad's done jail time. He ain't afraid to go back.
There you go. That's being a good dad right there.
Yeah. You know, and I put them through a lot through their teenage lives. Like my oldest would make sure I ate, and after coming off a sick one after like a weekend or a week, and you know, my youngest would hide my keys or my shoes or stuff like that. You know what I mean? So I put them through a lot, you know. And I could never figure out, like, why people were so, like, my mom and everybody were so upset at me. Like, how was I harming them?
Yeah.
I was the one drinking, and in my mind, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And so, fast forward a little bit, I decided in 2014, it was a three-day weekend, because my clean date is June 2nd. And I was going back home, and I remember I was living in New Mexico at the time, where I'm originally from, driving back home through Mill Creek. I don't know if you guys know that road. And
no.
I know God watched me many times driving that road.
Yeah.
Because it's real windy and everything. And I stopped on this lookout, and I had about a 12-pack and about half a gram with me. And I looked at it, and I just broke down, and I said a simple prayer. I was like, God, I can't. I'm tired. Like, I was ready to kill myself that day.
Wow.
And that's the only way I knew how to stop. Because, like, in my 20s, my best friend's dad had went to jail on DUI. So I got out, and he went to where I was working. I was working in the kitchen. I went back a little bit, sorry. And this will, like, continue in my story in just a few seconds.
Yeah, you're good.
But he went to where I worked. I was working at Sal's Market there. Do you remember Sal's?
Yeah.
They used to have a little kitchen, the best food in town. He went there and he was talking to me. And he goes, I heard what happened. Are you ready to try something different? So, of course, I was afraid of probation. And I was like, yeah, what do you got? He goes, well, you get off at 5:30, right? I'll come and pick you up. He didn't tell me where we're going. He took me to an AA meeting.
Wow.
So I was like maybe 20, 21 at the time. I walk in with all these old farts and I'm like, hey, man, this ain't cool, Jack. You know, and anyways, he bought me my first AA book and I went a few other times, but obviously I wasn't ready at that time. You know, I still had more runs in me. And anyway, so that day I remember pretty clearly when I stood on that lookout, I dumped out a 12 pack of beer and threw my pipe and my gram and crushed it. And I prayed, God, help me. I can't do this. And if it takes me killing myself, give me some kind of sign.
And at this point, it was meth, right, that you were using?
Meth and alcohol was my was my DOC. And then and I remember thinking after that, you're a dumbass. I'm like, now what are you going to do? You just crushed your life and poured it out right there, you know? Because that's all I knew.
Yeah.
You know, when I got stressed, that's what I turned to. And and at the time, my marriage of like 12 years was going south. And
man.
So, and like, I know why. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? But for the longest time, I wanted to blame her, but I had to find my part through the steps. And
that's a key, bro.
Yeah.
That's a key.
So, like, I had to find my part and make my amends. And I remember sitting in my truck looking. It's like, that guardrail can't be that strong. My truck could take it. And something came over me. He's, no, you go to, at the time, my older sister, Mona, she's always had my, all my sisters have always had my back, right? But this one especially, because she's the older sister, and I'm cheap today. I'm spoiled by my older sisters. I'm not even going to lie, and I still am to this day.
That's cool.
And I'm a mama's boy.
Yeah.
So I went to her at work, and she just looked at me when I walked into her place of work. She goes, you look like shit, brother. I was like, nice to see you too.
I'm getting it from all sides over here.
Yeah. And she goes, what's up? And I was like, nothing. I go, I'm just tired. I need help. She goes, well, hey, check it out. Go to mom's. It's like, that's the last person I wanted to go to see my mom. You know what I mean? Because if I didn't go to my mom's when I first got there, I wouldn't go because I didn't want her to see me all trashed and twisted, you know?
Yeah.
So I went to my mom's and I walked in and she was sitting on the kitchen table. She goes, what do you need, gas money? Are you hungry? I'm like, damn. You know, like, what's really going on here?
Yeah.
That was like my first moment of like clarity a little bit, you know, how they talk about in the big book. You get that first moment of clarity. That was it.
Wow.
You know, so I sat there and she even told me, she goes, like, look like somebody took a bait. And the whole time she's talking Spanish to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like somebody took a baseball bat to your face. Well, probably because I'd been up for like 4 days. And
like you said, you were on a sick ass one.
I was on a sick one, guy. Yeah, I got a sick ass one. And I go, yeah, probably. I feel like it too.
Wow.
I remember I just broke down crying. She knows I'm not a crier. Like, well, in my culture, you didn't do that. You know, and that machismo pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, shit almost killed me out there.
Man.
But anyways, I told her I need help. And my sister, she's in recovery as well. She came running out of the room wanting to, like, let's go to detox. Let's go. And I was like, I'm cool. Like,
yeah.
Hold on. Pump your brakes. So anyway, we have a family friend that she goes, call this person. It's like, I'm trying to get clean. Why would I call him? I didn't know he was in recovery.
Wow.
And then he was a godsend because he went and talked to me and, you know, hey, there's a meeting tonight. Why don't you go? And so I drove to the meeting, you know, and I didn't go in and I get home. I drove around for an hour. I didn't drink or nothing. I just kind of cleared my head, drove around. And they asked me, I was like, oh, it was good. Still lying and denying, you know what I mean? And my sister goes, no, how do you know you weren't there?
Ooh.
Because she went to the same meeting. I was like, damn, there went my anonymity.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next one, they took me. And it was in June. It was hot in Safford. I ain't walking home. So I stood there, and I didn't want to be there. I hated everybody. I was angry, and lo and behold, after working my steps, I wasn't hatred or anger. It was fear. It was a lot of fear-based that I didn't want to be there because I didn't know no other way.
Yeah.
And anyway, so...
Man, hitting some key points, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all fear-based.
Yeah.
And I found that out through the steps, like, either I could face everything and recover, fuck everything and run, right?
Yeah.
I ran most of my life. I was tired of running. You know, so I remember going for like, and I wasn't that guy who got a sponsor right away. And I didn't go to detox. I detoxed at my mom's, worst 12 days of my life, because I detoxed from alcohol. And I think it had to be that way with me because I'm pretty stubborn. Like, I had to feel that pain.
Yeah, I think that's part of our culture too, bro.
Like, I had to feel that pain not to go back to it. If I would have found an easier, softer way. And like all these things I'm using, I hated when I first got here. Like, these guys are idiots. Why are they talking all this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
And now I see it, you know, because I have a good friend that we go to AA meetings. He goes, when you first get here, all these readings are noise. They're just words on a paper. But you stick around, they have meaning to it. And that's what I had to do. I had to stick around till the meaning got to it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, and yeah, it was a long 12 days. I can remember not sleeping, the leg shakes, the throwing up, the not wanting to eat.
And it's dangerous too, huh? Something could have had like something bad happen with alcohol, especially.
And my mom wanting to feed me, like, not feeding me, but giving me all these like Yervas and you know what I mean?
Yeah. She pulled out the ancestry book and started bringing all kinds of stuff out.
Yeah, the Harry Potter book, I call it. You know, and I had to feel that pain not to want to go back to it.
Yep,
and absolutely. Like anytime I get that thought, I remember them 12 days.
Yep.
You know, and now where I'm at today is like, I remember when the coalition first started and they first started talking about the men sober living. I talked to Kathy, who, by the way, I'm going to send her a little shout out. She's an amazing lady.
The best.
She does a lot for.
Shout out to Kathy.
Yes.
Shout out.
She's amazing.
She does a lot for the recovery community. She's.
Yeah. I'll give her one of these, bro.
There you go. She deserves
it. Kathy.
Sorry, I'm just looking for an excuse for my sound effects. But shout out to Kathy.
Yes.
She's an amazing lady. Like, she's never suffered from addiction, but for some reason she's passionate about it. She's always wanting to learn. She's always asking questions about it. And
yeah,
and like the cool thing about Heart Coalition is like we have a wraparound effect. There's a prevention team and we're the recovery team. You know, the prevention tries to go to the schools and talk to them about vaping and the dangers of fentanyl and stuff like that. So they're out there put boots on the ground. You know, and it's like I tell them, I don't care if you take business away from me. I'm tired of burying people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then that's one thing cool. We're like, we're one of the few in the state that have that wraparound effect. And now we have the re-injury. And then we have like the recovery side of the, and we're getting ready to build a sober living for women in Safford.
And a new re-entry
center.
Wow. All through the coalition?
Yeah, all through the coalition.
And this coalition started out by Kathy?
By Kathy Grimes. She's been
2003, right?
Yeah.
20 years she's been working on this.
Wow.
She started when meth was a thing.
Wow.
And how'd you get tied in into with Kathy and the coalition?
What's
your role there? You're the what?
I'm the recovery project specialist coordinator, whatever. Because I oversee like the House of Hope, the Recovery Angels, and she does. I guess they needed somebody to oversee the reentry, but I'm one of those. I stay in my lane. Like, she knows what she's doing, and like, if she needs help, she'll ask.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
we tag team on the Recovery Angels, though. We're a good team. Yeah, we just met.
We complement each other pretty good.
We do. We just met, and it was like, we have both a lot of the same views or opinions, maybe, but we just, the first time we rode together, we just clicked. And because we're both addicts and alcoholics, like, I'm the same as Jason. I'm a horrible alcoholic. But the thing I went to prison for was meth and weapons, which I don't even know how I got there. I was trying to be a whole gangster. You know what I mean?
I feel you.
For real. Like, I don't even know how it happened. Because I've had a lot of deaths in my family. My first husband died of addiction. My two brothers have died. My nephew. But when me and Jason both have a lot of experience with that. And so we're empathetic, but we're not pushovers either. We're like, we know how to talk to people, but we don't enable them, or we're not real super soft with them. Like we're a good team. Like,
yeah.
Cause when I got here, I thank God I had people like my sponsor that didn't pull no punches with me.
Yep.
Like I didn't always like him, but I'm grateful for that man now.
Without love, that's what they call it. It's love, huh?
Yeah, it's like, as far as a coalition, I told Kathy years ago, you know, I was working in a treatment center down here as a tech, but my mom got sick, so I moved to Tucson, back to Safford, I mean, to help my sisters with her. And anyways, so, and then I went to a coalition meeting, because we have those every first Tuesday of the month open to the public. And one of my sponsors at the time, Matt, invited me, so I went, and I told her, well, if there's any volunteer work, I'm interested in this kind of work. And anyways, the guy running it before me, it didn't work out. Whatever the cause may be, I didn't ask. It was none of my business. So she called me a few times, and I was like, yeah, I'm not sure, because I had a steady job, because I had been a meat cutter for 22 years prior to that.
Oh, wow.
That was my trade. But too, God works in mysterious ways. My hands were killing me already. And finally, like the third time she called, I went to an interview, and I went, and I didn't know what was going to happen. Again, leaving it in God's hands, right? God's going to put me where he wants to. She goes, well, why don't you go take a tour of the house with Mr. Rivera? He's a board member. And he says, well, this is what you're going to be doing if you get the job. And he kept slipping, you know. But at the time, I wasn't paying attention. And from there, I went to a meeting. Before I got to the meeting, she called, well, the job's yours. Do you want it? It's like, of course I want it. And it started part-time. A couple months into that, I started the Recovery Angels with my cousin, Ruben Baca, which he's big in the recovery community, too. And
shout out, Ruben.
Yeah, shout out to Ruben Baca, too.
One more to Ruben
Baca. Yes.
So we started that. And what the Recovery Angels do is, like, they go to me, and I started working with the ARC and just different treatment centers to help place these people. And of course, we work all on grants and stuff. We got a grant, and we were able to get a vehicle. And now we got two vehicles. Sometimes they're running on both days, two a day. But anyways, we get in place. We provide transportation and stuff like that. And then I also run the House of Hope, the Sober Living for Men. So I get the opportunity to work with men in recovery on a daily basis. Wow. And it's like I tell them, either you want this or you don't. This isn't a place for, this isn't a house for people who need it. It's a house for people who want it.
That's awesome.
And I, like, a lot of them go probation. I go, you're going to be probation clean or you're going to be real clean? Like, you pick. You know, because I get the opportunity now to go in jails, like to teach recovery courses. We teach an Inside Out Dad program, mm-hmm. which is for dads getting in recovery or out of prison, just navigate the stressors, you know, because I know, like for me, I had a co-parent, because 30 days in sobriety, I got handed divorce papers. So my life was going great. And then that story I told you about my best friend's dad taking me to my first AA meeting, this is where it ties in now. Anyways, I coached his grandsons because now I do volunteer work throughout the community. I coach softball. I coach the league. And
that's awesome, man.
So, and then when this year, I'm not going to have time, but I'll still, like, umpire, they need me or go help. I help one of my stepdaughters, like, if she calls me, and she's, because I was in a relationship before I got this, whatever. But I got real close with the kids, and one of them still calls me, like, for help for softball and to help her coach or whatnot. So I go help her. But and anyways, I coached his grandsons. So I think it was my sixth or seventh year chip. Before he passed away, I got a chance. I go, hey, I owe you this. You planted that seed.
Wow.
And I gave him my 7-year chip.
Didn't we just take his daughter.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is where it's going to tie in. So about, I want to say 3 months ago, I started working with one of his daughters. She was younger. I remember her as a kid because me and her brother were best friends coming up. So she called me out of the blue. She goes, "Is this Jason?" I go, "Yeah." She was living at the safe house there in Safford. And she goes, "I need to talk to somebody before I go off the deep end. The DCS just took my kids." I was like,
"Ooh."
She told me your name. I was like, "You know what? I'll be right there." And I told her, she goes, "I know your dad." She goes, "I know who you are. My dad spoke real highly of you. And that's what made me decide to call you." And I'd been working with her for like 3 months now, trying to get her to go treatment. She got in a real bad accident. She almost died. And finally, we took her last week.
Wow.
And today I get to have a teaming with her and her case manager from the treatment center she went to.
Planting those seeds, bro. It's the same way they were planted in you. You know what I mean? That's cool.
And like today, I still attend like 3 to 4 meetings a week. I sponsor guys. And
how many years so far? I know it's coming up again in June, you said, right?
Yeah, I'll have 10 years in June.
10 years. Congratulations. Let me give you another round of applause, bro. 10 years.
It's just been like blessing after blessing. I got my girls back in my life to where they didn't have to allow me back in, or they allow me their trust again. And like I got, this is the first year that I went and spent Thanksgiving at my daughter's apartment where she cooked for me. Mm-hmm. Like, and she didn't, you know, and she goes, "Dad, you kick back. Let me do this."
That's cool.
So,
man, working throughout the community.
Sometimes he'll get a female that's like, he'll call me and be like, can you just mentor this person or talk to him? Because they're not quite ready to go to rehab. And I ended up getting a good relationship with one of the girls. I just texted her this morning and she's like, "I need to ride to probation." And we haven't taken her to rehab or anything like that, but she's somebody in the community that just could relate to me. And Jason's like, "I need you to talk to her, you know?" And even members of my own family, I've called Jason and we haven't quite gotten it there yet. But, and I've been like, "Hey, we need to do this. We need to," or "I know this person." And, you know, we work together to try to get people into recovery or just support him, just like his mentors. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking to a guy today and he's like, "Oh yeah, I mentored him way back." So we're just trying to be supportive to people. Cause just like he said, people, like they say, you don't keep what you have unless you give it away. Exactly. Or, and we need to give freely what was given to us.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people get in recovery and they lose that. But when you're working with addicts and alcoholics every day, and I'm passionate about being an advocate and giving like hope and light to these people and showing them like that they can live into what's actually possible. Cause Jason and I have talked about this, like, we're the worst addicts. We're the worst alcoholics. Like I was seriously wounded. Like I just felt I was void, you know, and I'd done so many things that until I worked my steps and let go of my guilt and shame, I feel like we're relatable. And I feel like when people first see me, they're like, "What are you, are like a school teacher?" Like he said, he goes, I go, "I just got out of prison." And he said, "I thought you were a lawyer or something in your suit."
He was all in a suit and everything, man. I thought I was going to ask him for a card. He was an attorney, just in case.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Yeah, it's true.
And right? I was like, "Hey, I'm not an attorney, but I've been like in so many
I got some experience,
and
right?
Absolutely. Like, I'm a paralegal. I'm a
paralegal.
Not, right, in prison. Like, I've been to court so many times and through so many things. Like, yeah. We know a lot about the law.
Exactly.
But, on the wrong side of it, but we've seen enough people go through court, but we've taken a little girl from jail before, and she's not a little girl. She's a grown woman, but she looks very cute. And we picked her up and, we're taking her and she said, "Man, those girls in jail were so mean to me." And I said, "Are you facing prison time?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Those girls in jail are a cakewalk. A cute little thing like you comes in, like you do not want to go to prison." And she's looking at me like, "How do you know?" And at this point I'd been out of prison for 3 weeks. And I'm like, because I just got a DOC and I did 5 years. And if you think jail is, she said, "Everybody says prison is better than jail." I said, "Well, you can smoke cigarettes in prison and you get a little bit more freedom, but you do not want to go to jail." And she's still in treatment.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like now I get to sit on the drug court team and.
Oh, he took me the other day and I have not been in that courthouse. I kept telling him, I was like, "I can't believe this."
You're so triggered.
Well, the last time I was in there and I told him that, I go, those chairs right there, I was shackled to three other people and I was getting sentenced to 7 years in prison.
Wow.
By the same judge. And I kept just like looking at Jason and I'm like, this is so crazy.
Full circle.
Full circle.
And just the blessings that God has given me to work with these. Like, I work with a hospital to where if somebody goes in on an overdose, they'll call me. We'll go try and talk him in. And sometimes, like Kristen was saying, sometimes they're not ready, but they just need that somebody to talk to.
Yep.
You know, because I know everybody's not going to be ready right then and there. But you don't. We don't shoot our wounded, right?
Right.
Mm. Amen.
You know, we keep just planting that seed and watering it. Hopefully it grows.
Well, he says he stays in his lane, and he does. But I ask him, and I was doing a different position. When I first got out of prison, I just wanted to give back a little bit. So I was just volunteering with the Recovery Angels. And then a job came open. This is literally 2 weeks after I got released. And Jason and Kathy took me to lunch and they're like, we'd like to offer you this 10 hours a week. And then I was the reentry mentor trying to get mentors. And then I just got into this reentry position, which is already what I was like trying to do, advocate for inmates. And the newsletter is all about supporting them and showing that people can recover. But in his house, there's three guys in the house, or there's five guys in the house that are actually in the reentry program. So I'll go ask him, like, you know, for help with that. But we are able to provide them with, like, if they get a job with work boots, and I'm able to reach out to inmates that are about to get out. And a lot of them I've known personally or know because they're from the community. And that's really what we're trying to do, is these people are releasing back into our communities. Not just reduce recidivism or reduce crime, is because I really want to see him be successful. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see him go back to prison, but when I reach out to him, I'm like, I think you should sign up for this program because it's going to be beneficial to you. But I'm here to help you, and I know where you've been, because it's kind of hard when you're in prison or something and a CO3 is teaching you this class about drugs or the cognitive behavior class or whatever class they're teaching you. You're like, but when an inmate comes in that's been in prison and they're passionate about it, or the girls that used to be in prison come in to do AA with you.
Personal, huh?
Yeah. So like when me and Jason sit down and do our class, which we've only done it a few times with the guys, they're like really receptive and them, same thing. They're like, wait, what? You just got out of where? Just because but then immediately, like, we can relate to each other, you know? Mm-hmm. We can relate. And we're all the same. I say that all the time. Like, when you get to prison, you get three pair of pants, three shirts that are used. And you're all on, not food stamps, but you're all under the care of the state. You all get the same state issue. You all get that. So that's why we turn to God, I think, in prison or in jail, is because that's all we have. And I'm really passionate about the 12 steps, but I think any way you recover, if you find your own thing and that's the only way you can do it, then that's good. Exactly. Like, I love the 12 steps. Me and Jason have a lot of the same views on things like that, but I like anybody that gets in recovery. It's good for them.
It's like I tell people, recovery is not a one size fits all.
No, we're not in gangs.
Amen. Shout out to Matt. He always says that.
It's not a one size fits all. Some people find it through church. Some people find it through 12 steps. Some people find it within families.
It's a tailored suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I just happen to find
it. My meaning of recovery might not be the same meaning of other people recovering, being open-minded for that. But what I'm kind of listening to more is about the beauty about peer support, right? We all started as peer support. And the opportunity given to people like us, right? I remember thinking, in our head, when we're out there running and gunning, right? Judges, prosecutors, probation, law enforcement. It's like us against them, right? Yeah. And it's really not. It's just us in general, right? But in our mindset, we do think like they're the enemy, right? But look, they give us opportunities. You know, there's opportunities for people like us. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks out of you being released from incarceration, you were given the opportunity to give back. You know, you're given the opportunity to give back. So it's about the beauty. I think that peer support, that's my favorite kind of saying. I want to get it trademarked, bro. You got to help me trademark
this.
Peer support's the special sauce for treatment. You know what I mean?
Copyright.
Copyright.
2024.
Yeah, copyright. Peer support is the special sauce for treatment. You know, it might not be everything, but if you get a peer support there to sit someone side by side, you mentioned somebody, you needed someone to grab your hand and take you to a meeting because you drove around, right? And us as adults, we need someone to carry us and guide us through the step. And who better than someone that's gone through that lived experience and could walk you through that? This is what you're going to expect in your first meeting. Mm-hmm. There's going to be old people, and this is, you know, this is what you're going to expect going into rehab. You're going to sit there at the lobby. You might have to wait. You're going to do a drug test. You're going to be admissions. This is what you're going to expect to detox. You're going to feel like shit. You know, you're going to, it's going to be, so, hey, this is what you're going to expect while going to jail and prison and recovery, you know, but still kind of plant the seed like, hey, you know, there's classes there. Take advantage of your sentence and all that. And I just want to kind of share an experience that I haven't shared, man. When I was going to Safford, I did 3 years in Safford at the FCC,
yeah,
Federal Correction. So I haven't been to Safford since I got released. And when we were going to go to do this sheriff talk, I saw the mountain. It had snow there. And it kind of brought this thought to me because I remember the last 13 months I spent them at the SHU, at the segregation holding unit.
Damn.
And
13 months?
13 months, bro, in the SHU. That kind of hit, like, we're incarcerated. That's when suicidal kind of thoughts happen, mm-hmm. and I was going crazy in my mind. But they were giving me an hour, and then Safford in the winter gets cold, well. So I remember if I had to go out to the yard 1 hour a day, they have to get the officers to take me to the yard 1 hour. But in winter, I wouldn't want to go out because it's – so I spent a few months without even going outside myself or never, you know, because it was just too cold. But when I did go out, there was this mountain, and I would see, like, snow on top of the mountain and like that. And I just started getting this feeling inside of me, this anxious feeling, as soon as I saw that mountain. And then I called my wife, too, and because my wife used to go visit me. When I was at the SHU, there was no visits, no phone time, no nothing, you know? But at the beginning, she used to visit me a lot, and I called her, and I was like, hey. She's all like, go pass through there. And I was going to get past. But as soon as I knew I was going to just pass through it, I started getting more anxious. And I said, F it. Why am I going to even want to go back there and just pass through it? So I just said, like, you know what? I'm grateful for my freedom today. And let me not forget to take advantage of little things.
Yeah.
Little things. So I was just enjoying. I'm going to enjoy this because I don't like to feel anxious, man. I don't like to feel my stomach and me breathing hard, my hands getting sweaty and all that, what I was feeling at that moment. And it just kind of caught my eye caught my attention that I haven't been to Safford since then, yeah. You know?
Wow.
I remember being released. So it was kind of the beauty. And then having to share those experiences, like right now, having to share this with you guys. That was something that I went through personal. Like I remember going to you with Jace and Tony were there. And I didn't really open up to them or being like, hey, I was here in Safford. And because it's not about war stories, you know? But if there's an individual, you know, like God puts it to you in your heart and soul, like, he puts people in our path where,
amen,
where you know, like, you got something to share.
Right.
Nothing goes in vain. You know, we all go through our shit for a reason, one way or another. So there's going to be opportunities where we're going to be able to share a story, and we're giving back. If you give people like us opportunities, look, there's three of us sitting in this podcast, right? Buddha, too, he does an amazing job just getting people here to share our stories, you know, sending a message of hope.
Absolutely.
Sending a message of hope. And I really give you guys props for what you guys doing. I've been hearing that Safford has a lot of drug issues, but then it comes recovery. You hear Jason. Now you're hearing about Kristen doing these amazing jobs.
Yep.
You know, with their amazing backgrounds that we're having the opportunity to hear their story and our listeners hearing their story, knowing that recovery is possible, right?
Yeah, we can recover.
We can recover, yeah.
And Jason and I also talk about, like you said, the war stories. Like, everybody knows how to get drunk and high. Exactly. And like today, I touched on that a little bit, but I got some really horrible things that I don't... The further I get in my recovery, like, my story, like, all that drunk and high and arrests and running is not the cool part of my story. The cool part of our story is that we made it, like, that we're in recovery.
Uh-huh.
That's what's cool. And I've been amazed at how much grace people give me since I've been out, because it didn't used to look like that when you got out of prison. Like, recovery is becoming more like it's a top field to be in, you know, but I've met so many people through this community just in the 4 months, like just meeting you guys. And I met some people that have a record label called Sober House Records that they only sign people in recovery, and they deal with people that wrote songs behind bars, and you know, and we all get tied in and work together, and then we show people recovery is possible.
Mm-hmm. Man, you know, a lot of what I'm hearing from all of you guys is like healing, recovery, you know, what you were saying about Safford and stuff, like where that mountain could have been a trigger for you at one point. You were able to kind of, you know, utilize your resources, call your wife, whatever you needed, and think about it in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that comes with recovery. And it kind of ties into what you said earlier, bro, how you were talking about when your sponsor, this gentleman, bought you this book for the first time. It's like you were in there and you read the book, you heard it, what they were saying, but you weren't listening. Mm-mm. You weren't paying attention to it. Reminds me of when Jesus talks about the parables, bro. Like, it's not meant for everybody to hear until they're ready.
Until they're ready.
But it's like once you get that, and once that change and transition is happening in your life, it's a very, very, very powerful thing.
Yeah, right now the beauty of Safford is like probation, this Judge Peterson and Judge Ragland. They're not about sending people to prison right now. That's not their goal. And they'll tell you, like, we don't want to send you to prison. Like, of course, you might do some shit that's going to get you there.
Yeah.
But just for, like, the simple use paraphernalia, let's get you these guys help.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember one of my close friends, he's one of the guys I turn to a lot when I'm struggling. He told me this really cool story one time, and I'm going to kind of tell it, see if I don't butcher it. There's this little kid that, and the reason I tell it, because it makes a lot of sense to me. And this is kind of where I found my, like, a little kid every day, dad and little kid, every time the dad comes home from work, dad, I want to play catch. Not right now, I'm busy, I'm tired, I'm going to just rest for a little bit. Goes on, dad, little kid comes again, like, for 3 days. So finally the dad is reading the paper, and he finds a picture of the world on the paper, right? He tears it up into a bunch of pieces. He tells his son, once you put this back together, son, we'll go play catch. So the son comes back about maybe 15, 20 minutes later. And dad says, how'd you put that together so quick, son? He said, dad, you see in the back of that picture of the world you give me, there's a picture of a man. Once I got the man together, the world fell in place.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So like, that's the way I try to work my recovery. You know, once if I could hold together my things, I'm able to give away more. Like, if I'm walking this walk, because, like, I tell people, like, when you get here, I'm not watching your mouth. I'm watching your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a program of action.
Yep.
You know, because we could all, like, we're all.
We could all talk, right? We could convince a judge not to send us to prison, right?
Yes. You know, like, we're manipulators by trade. And I joke with people, like, given the chance, I can manipulate the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at what point do we change? You know, start doing the things we say we're going to do.
Yep.
Having some integrity, having some self-pride. You know, like I run the Sober Living, and here a couple months ago, I grew up with this guy I've known for 30 plus years. We ran the streets together quite a bit. You know, we did a lot of dirt together. Now he's in my home.
Wow.
And he tells me, like, I would never think you would have gotten sober.
That's always a cool thing to see.
I didn't even think that myself.
That makes two of us, bro.
That makes two of us right here.
You had that interaction. Was that fucking you, Jason?
Yeah.
That's you, bro?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like, crazy. He called me by my street name, and somebody, they haven't called me that in years.
Yeah.
Hassan?
No, they used to call me Doughboy back in the day.
Doughboy?
Doughboy?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
He's all, Dough, is that you? Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's me, guy. But now, like, he won't call me that in front of everybody at the house. And I asked him why. He goes, I have a lot of respect for you.
That's the beauty about recovery, huh? When your nickname goes away.
Yeah, your nickname goes away and they call you by your name.
That's how I had a nickname, too. Everyone know me by my nickname. And I still live in the same neighborhood that I grew up where I did all my running and gunning. So everyone kind of knows me there. And some of them call me Martin, and some even call me Don Martin, like, with respect. And it's weird. At first, it was kind of like, but my nickname started kind of fading away. And there's only a few that probably early coming out of prison, haven't seen me in a while. They start, and once they start kind of learning, I start seeing how they kind of start putting my nickname away and start calling by my name.
By your government name.
By my government name, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty cool, too, you know.
Your mama used to call you that. You knew that's when you were in jail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, your middle name, right?
Yeah.
When we sit at the Substance Abuse Coalition meetings, it's like usually me and Jason, and then it's the girls that teach our prevention, and Kathy, they're really awesome, you know. And then it's like them, and then it's like board of supervisors, somebody from probation, somebody from CBIS, somebody from whatever. But like you said, me and Jason get some respect, which is not crazy to me that we shouldn't get mm-hmm. respect, but it's because people need people like us to help
they
them combat
do need
it.
People like us.
They really do. And I told a lady the other day, I said, you know, prison saved my life because she's worried about her kid going to jail if she kicks him out. And I said, you know, if he's using fentanyl, you better give him Narcan. And she's like, thinks that's the craziest thing. And I kind of explained it to her, but I told her, I said, going to jail, prison saved my life. Like sometimes God has to literally separate us from the sin mm-hmm. we have
yep.
and sit us down until we can get sober and think clear enough. And somebody told me the other day, cause I posted something on Facebook that I just realized I was 5.5 years sober. And somebody messaged me and said, you can't count your prison time as sober time.
Yeah, you can.
Prison, drugs are readily available in yeah. prison, oh, even yeah. during COVID. And if not, you can just go right down to a medical and get on gabapentin or whatever. There's drugs everywhere in prison. So, mm. so I do count that as my clean time, but you also get that opportunity to sit down and be sobered up by the fact there's nothing more sobering than waking up in county jail. You know yeah. what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I really think, and you know, they give us these badges and it's just so crazy. I had to wear ID in prison all the time, but just when me and Jason walk into court together, and I know a lot of them just have only seen me in court, and it's just, you know, to be respected like that. I was felt really uneasy for a while when I was there, because just like you said, a trigger kind of, it kind of triggered me being in that courthouse. And then, but I also, the people that were on drug court, find myself that like, we're really rooting for them, everybody in there. Back in the day, when I first was getting in trouble, like in the early 2000s, 90s, whatever, you got a dirty UA, they were hauling you back to prison.
Exactly. That's how it was when I was going.
Yeah.
And I tell these people too, man, you guys got opportunities mm-hmm. now. I remember I violated, tested positive a couple of times, boom, violated probation, back to jail, then prison.
Wow.
I've been arrested 19 times, to prison 3 times too. And not to glorify,
no.
but all of them do for stupid stuff like that. Now I think about it, probably stupid, but people get a bunch of opportunities. The yeah. system has changed. Mm-hmm. And we play a big part in that, because we sit in those tables. They're giving people like us opportunity, like they're giving to Kristen now, like Jason, because they're asking for an input, you know?
Yeah.
So we could be that voice. So Kristen right now in Graham community, Jason, they're being that voice for peer support, right? For people that are right now probably not even in the system, and how judges, prosecutors, the whole system could probably change. And then sometimes we don't even take those opportunities in.
Yeah.
Or
could be over fear, like he said. It could be anything. Fear, you know, or we're
manipulative too. We're thinking, I'm going to get chances. You know, yep. I'm going to get sent to rehab. I still could get high and all that kind of stuff.
Pride right there.
I'm going to drink bleach.
Yeah, I'm going to drink bleach.
Take
right?
some baking soda. Like, I don't know why I know those things, but.
Yeah, go buy at the smoke shop those cleansing detox thingies. And
yeah, that is iffy if it's going to work or not.
Carry piss on you all the time.
Ew.
We go to any lens to go get high and try to pass a UA. Why not go to any lanes to go get sober, right?
No shit.
Yep.
Right?
I have a funny story about that, carrying urine with EP.
Oh, you too?
Not me.
Oh, you too?
Believe it or not, it wasn't me. For some god-awful reason, I was clean that day. Probably, I don't know, something happened. God was on my side. Anyways, we all hit clean, and the probation, because we used to have to go to the clinic there in New Mexico where they test it right away. And the probation officers that come out to this one guy, sir, congratulations, you're pregnant.
Yes, I've heard that.
I about died laughing. I was like, dude, you're an idiot.
We do some crazy shit, huh? Once we're under the influence, we go to any lanes, right?
Yeah.
The girls in prison carry around, not all of them, but especially the old timers, they carry around what they call a setup with them. So when they get pop for UA, they have a little thing of urine. It's so crazy.
But the beauty about us is that we could call each other on the bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, you know what? Boom, 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 this and that. There's no time for sugarcoat. That's how I am when mm-hmm. I'm kind of helping people. You know, this is life or death. Like, I don't have time to be playing this game with you right now, kind of going around the bushes and sugarcoating. Like,
Yeah, it's true.
You're going to freaking die, you know, if I don't call you out on this BS. And this is, and I do it with love and respect, you know, but I got to, we got to do it, you know?
Well, and we'll put all the work into somebody that we can. But when we have somebody that's just like wasting our time, not that they're a waste of time, we try our best. But I mean, we're going to pour into the people that really want it, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead, it's like Jason. I tell people, like, today it's not about getting addicted. It's about staying alive.
Exactly.
The center's out there. Yeah. It could be your last use or it could be your last use.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's real, man.
And like, I'm tired and like, I'm tired of burying my friends.
Yes.
Me too.
Like, I'm sick of going to funerals over this bullshit.
What do you tell them all the time about when we take them to detox? What do you tell them about don't mistake feeling better?
Oh, like I tell people, don't mistake feeling better for getting better.
Yeah.
Because after you detox her, you feel great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I got this. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's that pink cloud.
Yeah. No, you might want to think about going to some treatment after detox. Just because you feel better doesn't mean you're getting better.
Yeah. Man.
Like, I feel great today, but tomorrow doesn't mean I'm better.
That's real.
What I like telling people when I'm getting them into detox or rehab, they'll say tomorrow, no? So I tell them, hey, the funeral's getting full of people that say tomorrow. Because mm-hmm. they think they're going to get high for the last time. And it's been numerous of times, mm-hmm. numerous of times that people tell me tomorrow they get high for their last time. And it's really their last time.
Yeah.
And I call later, their mom, we found them dead. So I tell them, you know, the funeral is getting full of tomorrow. Let's do it right now. At least if they don't want to, I coach them. Do you have Narcan? And it's like, is there someone, is your mom there with you? Can I speak with them? And kind of coach the mother or the wife or family member, any support if they have it, and be like, hey, just keep an eye on him for tomorrow, you know? And I'll explain to him and I'll be for real. It's like, you know, I'm just afraid that he's going to want to get high because I know the addictive mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go get detox. I'm going to go to detox recovery tomorrow. So I'm just going to get high.
I'm going to have one last run.
Yeah, I'm going to have one last run. I still got a little bit left. You know, I don't want to throw it away. And I understand it, and because I've been there, and I really do understand it. But I guess I had to take it to another approach where I gotta now at least coach it and make it some kind of harm reduction thing, and having to tell their family members or tell them, hey, be with a friend, man, or don't get high by yourself. Mm-hmm. And
that's terrible. That I had a girl in prison tell me, she came right back and she said, a lot of people died around me. And I said, it's lucky it wasn't you. And she said, oh, if I ever use, I make sure I have Narcan. That's crazy, which to her credit, but not like if the drug you're doing, if you have to have something to save your life. And when we had that table the other night, people would come by and kind of like pick up the Narcan. There was two different people and they had a bag there and, well, I might need this. They were embarrassed. There's a stigma around it still. And I'm like, put it in your bag, because I think it takes people like us though, that are being successful in all the recovery community. That's the only way we're going to change that stigma. And I really want people to know that Narcan saves lives. Mm. You know, I'm not saying people think that gives people permission to use. And this is only my opinion. Like a lady asked me the other day, I have my son here using fentanyl. Do you have any advice? And I said, get some Narcan. Yeah. We have it for free. Get some Narcan.
Yep.
We can help if they're dead.
Yeah.
We can.
And it's like I tell them, if you're going to enable them, you just, instead of giving them money, start going paying at the funeral home.
Yeah.
I mean, and they look at me like, what do you mean? That's as real as I could get with you.
You're right.
Yep.
Talking
like if
about
you're gonna enable them to get high at the same time, at least give them the chance to pick out their, and this is harsh, at least give them the chance to pick out their casket.
Yeah.
Man.
Cause that's what it's doing to people. It's killing people.
And I think that's another important thing too to touch on is the fact that it also requires a shift of mentality for a lot of the family members that do enable. You know, I'd rather my son be here in the house and stealing from me and being manipulative and all the shit that comes with it versus him being out in the streets or feeling something, you know, being a prisoner in your own home, which nobody deserves to do that. You know, I really do think that there is a fine line with that tough love. It's a very, very fine line, but you know, it's necessary sometimes because even as parents, it's easy for us to allow our kids to continue to keep doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that we've talked about this a lot too. And at the Substance Abuse Coalition, we're really starting to focus on this, that like 1 in 4 people that have mental health issues also have substance abuse issues that like my mental health is good now because I'm doing recovery. You know, I had to get on some medication, nothing crazy or whatever, but I think that back when I was growing up, mental health wasn't a thing. Like you were hyperactive, you weren't. But I think a lot of us as addicts, until we get in recovery, get our mental health. That's another thing too, there's a big stigma around is mental health, and people are embarrassed about it. And we got to change the culture with our kids to where we can talk to them now. And I realize everybody doesn't have that family dynamic that where we have a mom and dad there, we have a kid there, but, strong families is what's going to, with social media and everything so crazy for those of us that have a nuclear family or anything like that. Even if you don't, even if you're a single dad or a single mom, I know if my mental health, I could have addressed it earlier in my life. And I know a lot of that we self-medicate or alcohol just made me feel better. And if I would do meth, it would just kind of like, Cause I have ADHD or for sure I do. Like I'm on medication and I'm still like, you know, and it's just, I think those things go hand in hand. And that's another thing we're trying to focus on with the Substance Abuse Coalition is correlation between mental health and substance abuse. And these are conversations we need to be having as communities,
go hand by hand, right?
They do.
Man. Yeah. Mental health and addiction.
Mm. Yeah.
Bro, you turn on, any type of social media platform, these pictures that people paint that their life is perfect. I mean, it makes people embarrassed to admit that they have a problem or they're thinking a certain way because they feel like all these other people got it together. It's all bullshit.
Yeah. It is.
But I think there's been a lot of progress because I remember when I first started this recovery, it was 2015 and all that. And it was more acceptable. People were talking about this a little bit more.
Yeah.
My culture was talking about it a little bit more as well. And now these days, especially now 2024, there's commercials about it. You see it on billboards. You see more flyers about it. It's more being more open, and it has a lot to do because I think people are realizing that, being united and asking for different kind of inputs or trying to break that stigma, trying to break that bias. And as us as well, too, living that lifestyle, like you said right now, like we don't cry. I remember thinking that as well, too, with my dad. I don't cry. I remember early recovery watching a movie or commercial and I get all emotional. And I was like, what's going on? I can't.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling this? And
what's this feeling?
What's this feeling? Why am I getting teary eyed? What I mean? And thinking like, no, it's okay. It's a movie. I can cry if my wife, and then now I don't care, I'm more open about it. If I'm talking to my daughters or something, if I get emotional, I get emotional.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
I think also everybody, there's either somebody in somebody's family has substance abuse problems almost now, or they're one degree removed from it. So it is people that didn't used to listen or no, just like I talk about the people being weird about picking up the Narcan. I'm like, put it in your bag. Like no one's looking, and so it's almost everybody has a substance abuse.
Yeah. It's like, the state is picking up Narcan.
Yeah.
Right. Just pick it up and go about
your
day. I'm a big fan of
Narcan.
Yeah. Take a picture.
I'm a big fan of Narcan. If it wasn't for Narcan, I wouldn't be here today. Mm-hmm. I've been brought back to life 3 times actually with Narcan. The last one was on my sober day, which was August 8th, 2015. I had an overdose and they brought me back with Narcan, and that's when I actually kind of clicked in. So I always like to promote Narcan, it doesn't matter how many times, because there's still, how you say, bias and stigma. Or are we enabling it to keep them alive? Of course, we got
to
keep them alive.
Yeah, you keep your family.
We can't help them if they're dead. And then what's it called? Firefighters, what's it called? Like emergency and
First responders.
First responders. Yeah, they're all like, well, how many times when Narcan, I remember being in these coalition meetings and these conversations, how many times are we going to bring them back, till they're... Like how many times it takes, why? Just because it's opiate. I remember saying, just because it's heroin, if it was another thing, would you be asking those questions?
And that's the thing about it. Like a lot of late 90s, early 2000s, 90s to that 2000, they're just looking at us as dope fiends. Like we were useless.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of these people. Dope fiends and alcoholics. They're not doing us no justice. And that's just the way it was. Like, they're putting the blemish on our small little communities. Mm-hmm. And, I grew up in Safford, and Safford's always had, I call it, we're like the experiment rats. if there's a new drug, they're going to send it to Safford.
Mm. Man, that's crazy.
And that's just the way it is. That's the way it's been since I've grown up there, from meth to heroin to now fentanyl.
Well, and that's where in the early 2000s, these strict laws on meth, rightfully so, I guess, came from. It doesn't matter if you got caught with 9 grams of meth or 900, you're going to do at least 5 flat. Yeah. And now with fentanyl, I'm not a lawyer, and this is my opinion, they need to come out with some tougher laws. I did see where a drug dealer that sold to a 15-year-old girl finally did get sentenced. And I know it's a touchy thing or whatever, but fentanyl is literally killing people and destroying our communities. Yep. So we've got to figure out some way to combat it. And that's where the prevention comes in. I've even told Jason, I'm like, man, I'm all into recovery, but I'm going to start doing a little prevention too. A lot of prevention, like, you know, like with my nieces and nephews.
You do that, girl.
Yes.
Yeah. I go to the schools and talk with the prevention team and tell them, hey, this ain't the road you want, I promise you.
Yeah. Yep.
They're going to listen to, like, you guys said it, to people who have been there, lived the experience. And
I think it's a good approach to combat this, because a lot of people with fentanyl issues really don't want to get clean, or they can't, or I don't know what's going on.
They don't
want
to be sick.
You know, it's just so hard to have those success stories with fentanyl. Yeah. So hard to reach. So I guess the best approach is working with that prevention. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like what we're doing right now, mm-hmm. we're trying to do some kind of prevention, right? Hopefully get to those people that are really not there, as gone yet, or probably done fentanyl, and hopefully we don't have to do what we do on a daily basis if we're working.
And like, speaking of social media, they're making it readily and available through Snapchat. Yep. Come on. Like, I didn't, like, with my drug of choice, you pulled out a cell phone, it was going to be mine.
Yeah,
I was killing all evidence. Yep. You know what I mean? You weren't going to have a cell phone around me. Yeah. Plain and simple.
That's crazy. It's crazy, you know, hearing you guys talk about that, because it's just proof that the world is getting rougher. Mm-hmm. You know, you got fentanyl. Last I heard, it was like $1 a pill, and it's mm-hmm. that addicting, you know, where it makes heroin look like child's play in comparison, you know.
Now they're adding xylazine. What's
trank.
Trank dope. Yeah,
it's horrible. Yeah, it's
literally
horrible.
Eats your flesh off your body.
Yep.
And there's no medical detox for that neither. No.
Can't. And you know, the conversations, even with our kids, I have to tell my kids all the time, I have a 12-year-old. Damn, she's 12 years old now.
Wow.
Lord, please help me. A 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. It's like, yo, don't even eat gummies or candies. Anybody gives you anything, unless it's a sealed package on Halloween, you get it from a teacher or something. Like, you got to be very, very careful nowadays, because people smelling the shit and falling out. You know,
we literally had that conversation on the way here. I was telling him that my brother, they said on this other podcast I was on that I kept talking about education. So they decided to educate themselves about fentanyl, and they have a lot of littler kids, and it's not like they're going to go have this really crazy conversation, but they have made it clear with their kids, from teenagers to the younger ones, that you never, ever, I don't care if it's a coach, I don't care if it's a teacher, if you have a headache, because they had this experience.
Oh, yeah.
And that coach gave him a Tylenol, which it turned out to be whatever. But my sister-in-law was like, doesn't matter what it is, you never take it. Plus, back in the day when I would go to a party, you know, people were smoking weed. Sometimes people are doing a little cocaine. I tell my kids all the time, and they're adults, like, or I used to tell them before they grew up, do not do any of that stuff. Like, you know, because now, you know, you don't know what you're getting, because it would just be a party drug. You could die from doing a party drug one time.
That's it, man. So scary. Well, thank you guys so much for coming and sharing what you guys are doing throughout the community. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I want to make sure that for anybody who wants to reach you guys, anybody needs to, you know, reach out, that they can do that. So please leave me a card, leave me numbers, things like that.
We will.
You know, before we close up, Martin, is there anything else you feel like we need to talk about, brother?
Kristen, if you want to take advantage of this moment, maybe share a message of hope or share a little bit, and then Jason, you could do the same too.
Excuse the listeners out there, they're wrestling upstairs again. We're gonna be moving locations here pretty soon, so.
Oh yeah. But
yeah they're making some noise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So and I say I'm an advocate, and I advocate for people that are incarcerated, addicted, but I'm also really an advocate for the families, because addiction isn't a personal disease. It's a family disease. It's a community disease. And that I want to, okay, I talk about the light. Like, I found my purpose through burning, and that's to give light to other people and give them hope. And I can The fact that I can do it, I want to be able to lead people into what's actually possible in life. I'm an ex-convict. Like you said, I've got 17 felonies, I think. That's how many I've been charged with in my lifetime. And within 2 weeks out of prison, I was able to get a job. And now I work with the Substance Abuse Coalition. There's possibility. Doesn't matter how low you are. And I see people like this all the time. Doesn't matter how low you are or how bad your life is. You can pick up a pen, like, and I'm writing my life story, literally, figuratively rewrite your story. Anything's possible. That's what I would say. Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Mm-hmm. Yes. Once again, I am so sorry for the knocking, guys. I apologize. It's fine. I apologize. What about you, brother?
I know recovery is possible. Just don't ever give up. Don't ever quit fighting, you know, because it's a lifelong disease.
Yep.
You know, just something you got to keep fighting every day, you know, and if you can, spread the message. You know, don't, and I like the way Christians said, don't recover in silence.
Yeah, recover out loud. Let people know.
Recover out loud.
Yep.
Recover out loud. And then I just want to close, like, with one thing, like, this was told to me a long time ago, and it stuck with me. We can't think ourselves into a new way of living. We got to live ourselves into a new way of thinking.
That's good.
Oh, I like that.
You know what I mean? So, like, we got to, again, walk the walk, you know, and accept the blessings that recovery has to give. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's not always fun.
Yeah.
Like he said, feeling them emotions for the first time. You're uncomfortable, like, right?
Got to be willing to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it sucks.
Also, Jason and I, both of us, I know, we take phone calls. We take...
My phone's always on.
From people that aren't just in Graham County. If we can help you, we will. We took a phone call on the way back the other day. Somebody from Springerville, which is way up north, needed to get somebody in. We try to help you. You don't have to be from Graham County for Recovery Angels to try to help you. We will try to help you.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Jason, Kristen, really thank you guys for accepting this invite.
Yes.
It was amazing. It was an honor to be part of this podcast with you guys. Buddha, thank you for the opportunity, brother.
Absolutely, brother.
Making it happen so quick. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're amazing in what you do. And hopefully this message kind of goes across to any listener and might touch someone. You guys want to give any shout outs before we kind of close it?
Like I say to Miss Kathy.
Kathy.
Shout out, Miss Kathy.
Yeah.
And to the girls that teach our prevention.
Carolina, Melissa.
And the guys at House of Hope, like, I see them every day. They're all trying to work, and I think they're doing great. And, you know, I just want to give a shout-out to...
Kudos to all them.
Yeah. All them, yep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everybody in our community that comes to the Substance Abuse Coalition.
Even the judge, right? And the prosecutor.
That comes and sits with the criminals. They're chilling with the villains is what they're doing.
Chilling with the villains. I like it.
There's one guy, too, in Safford that I really want to mention, Eric Baetti.
Oh, he's awesome.
He works with a homeless ministry through his church. But that guy's been in prison. He's just like, he's one of us. But he found his recovery through religion, which
shout
is
out
works.
To him.
There you go.
He goes out and feeds the homeless. He talks to them. He prays with them. And, like, he'll call me, hey, I got this ready for rehab. You ready to roll? Let's roll. So, like, Eric Baetti, he's boots on the ground, too, out there in Safford.
Hey, you know, whether it's Kathy or whether it's Eric, whoever's out there listening to this, man, if you guys want to come and share a little bit of hope and positivity, it would be an honor to have you guys, too.
You got to get Eric in here.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Get Eric in here.
Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, please get up out your seats one last time and give a huge round of applause to our good friends Jason and Kristen.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, absolutely. For all the listeners out there, just keep in mind, we still have that link tree. If you guys want to send us a message offering some positive affirmations, whether it's to Jason, Kristen, or any of the previous guests, you guys can do that, and we'll make sure we get it to them. Thank you so much for tuning in again to another episode. Hope you guys have a beautiful rest of your week. Much love and God bless. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the RCast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody you need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the RCast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us. We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love and God bless. Peace.